It's 10:06. You're listening to the Ideas Network of WPR. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn for the next couple of weeks. Well, just 10 years ago, 5% of workers on Wisconsin's dairy farms were immigrant. That's right, 5%. But by 2008, that number had jumped to 40%, or more than 5,000 workers. According to a 2009 study by the UW-Madison Program on Agricultural Technology Studies, those immigrants are changing the face of the state's signature industry while bringing increasing diversity and social challenges to the state's rural areas. As Wisconsin's dairy farmers hire more immigrants, they face mounting pressure to ensure their workforce is competent, skilled, and above all, legal. Experts say farmers are often caught in a don't-ask, don't-tell web of federal employment regulations with a strong incentive to know as little as possible about the legal status of their workers. The UW-Madison study didn't inquire about immigration status of dairy workers, but earlier federal studies have estimated that half of immigrant crop workers are working in the United States illegally. This hour, we're going to talk about these issues, and we'll be joined by two guests. First, Andy Hall, the executive director of the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Reporting, who has looked into this issue on a series they call Dairyland Diversity. Later in the hour, State Representative Pedro Colon will also be here to discuss his efforts in the Wisconsin Assembly fighting for immigrants' rights. Mr. Hall, welcome to the program. Good morning.
Good morning, John. Thank you very much.
So 40% of dairy farm workers in the state are undocumented immigrants. That's more than 5,000 workers. That's an awfully big number. How did we get to that point?
Well, I think, John, the story really begins with the individual dairy farmers around the state who, over the past decade, as they've sat around their kitchen tables and have tried to figure out how to survive in the face of competition from other states, they found the need basically to greatly expand the size of their operations. And with that rapid change in dairy farm size, has come a corresponding need for larger dairy workforces at the surviving dairies. We're, of course, seeing a decline in the number of dairy herds across the state. But as the farms have gotten larger, the individual farmers then have found a sharply increased need for an expanded workforce.
Yeah, it takes a lot more human capital to handle, say, 1,000 cows or more than it does to handle maybe 100.
Yes, that's exactly right. And as we take a look at what's happened to the herd sizes across the state over the past decade, we're seeing, for example, a 43% reduction in the number of herds that have fewer than 100 cows. But we're seeing a 400% increase in the number of herds of 1,000 or more, 400% increase in the number of herds that have 500 to 1,000 cows. So you're really looking at here a shift toward factory-scale farming. And with the need then to increase the size of the workforce, dairy farmers are finding, of course, they don't have enough children or cousins, or in some cases they say they can't find enough local teenagers or others in the area to fill the number of slots they have. Also, many farms are shifting from a two-a-day milking system to actually doing milking three times a day, again, to remain competitive with other dairy farms. So what we're finding is more and more the workers, particularly at the large dairy farms, are being hired as immigrants. They're more than half the workers of the large dairy farms, those of say 300 and more across the state. More than half of those workers are immigrant workers, as opposed to being U.S. born.
So, on a let's say there's we have a dairy farm with 1,000 cows or more. How many employees do you suppose are on that farm?
Well, it's going to vary immensely depending on the type of equipment and whether the farm engages in two-a-day or three-a-day milkings. But you know, I'd say somewhere in the neighborhood of maybe 30 or so workers would be a pretty common number. And, you know, even large farm families don't have that many children or cousins to draw from. So there's an increased need to hire outside help. And, of course, many of the rural communities around the state are finding that their overall population levels are decreasing. Family size is decreasing. So, you know, you look for other sources of labor, and a ready and enthusiastic source of labor is the immigrant population.
Well, enthusiastic is the word, because this is hard work, it's difficult work. Certainly doesn't smell nice. So, you know, we all want milk on the table, or cottage cheese, or whatever dairy product is that we use, but we don't really know that much about how it gets to us.
That's right. And, you know, the immigrant workers are coming to Wisconsin, and, of course, to every state in the country in search of economic opportunity, and will put up with harsher working conditions, and I would have to say lower pay levels than many native-born workers will. The PATS study that you referenced earlier, which was really the foundation for much of our reporting project, found that on average the immigrant workers were earning something around $1 an hour less for doing comparable work compared to the native-born workers who were surveyed in the farms across the state.
Would this? How much? What's the average wage for farm workers of all types? The hired hands on the farm. What would they normally get?
I believe the figure was somewhere probably around $11 an hour. It varies, of course, by type of work. Managers making more than the milkers themselves, and it varies, of course, by experience level. But I believe it was in that ballpark.
Well, that's not a lot of money to begin with, and then the immigrant workers are making less than that.
Correct, and usually about $1 an hour less. They were working an average of just under 60 hours a week. We're taking off about 5 days per month, which obviously that's not a lot of time off. Most of us have about 8 days off per month. And a lot of these shifts are in the middle of the night, and again, we're talking about Wisconsin, so in the winter, we're talking about some harsh conditions for doing that work, and it's really a tough way of life for the immigrant workers, but one which on balance many of them are finding is better than what they left behind in their home countries, which usually, by the way, was Mexico.
Okay, so where else besides Mexico are these workers coming from then?
From really all over Central and South America, but something like 90% of the workers, according to the PATS study, are from Mexico. Mm-hmm. And surprisingly, about two-thirds of the dairy workers who participated in the survey said that they have children, and most of those live with their children. About three-fourths of the dairy workers who have children do live with those children in the United States. So this is an example of how the influx that begins with dairy workers results in other types of demographic changes in Wisconsin that in turn have an impact on who's in our schools, who's using healthcare facilities, who's using businesses, you know, the whole fabric of life in rural Wisconsin is being affected by this shift in the dairy workforce.
Well, yeah, how is this influx of workers from Mexico and elsewhere in Latin America being received in the rural areas where the dairy farms are located?
Well, as you're seeing as the national debate over immigration, particularly illegal immigration, is playing out across the country, it's a very mixed picture. We in our reporting certainly have not found the kinds of tensions that are so apparent in Arizona. We did a lot of reporting, for example, in Darlington and Lafayette County, taking a close and prolonged look at how the influx of Spanish-speaking immigrants has affected the way of life in Darlington. And although at first, say, 7, 8, 9 years ago, there certainly were some tensions and misunderstandings with the arrival of Spanish-speaking residents, the police department in Darlington actually ended up recognizing that a way to deal with that head-on might be to hire a Spanish-speaking police sergeant. And quite a few people around the community told us that overall has worked well to diffuse the tensions, increase the level of understanding between the Spanish-speaking immigrants and the native-born population, and that now, by and large, in Darlington, the Spanish-speaking immigrants are being accepted into the community, are feeling a part of the community, are increasingly reporting crimes to the police rather than fearing that they'll be somehow in trouble by having contact with the police, that there's an increasing level of interest in on the part of native-born residents in learning how to speak Spanish in the local school system, that certainly there are still some tensions, misunderstandings. Some residents do feel that perhaps the presence of the immigrants might be depressing wages or causing a drain in some cases on social services or the medical system. So it's a complicated picture. That's why we've taken six stories now to take a look at various slices of it.
Well, and those the stories you're talking about are available on your website, which I wanted to make sure to mention. It's Wisconsin Watch, all one word, wisconsinwatch.org, www.wisconsinwatch.org, and you can get details and background on this issue and read the stories there, if you like, and join us here as well. The phone number to call to be a part of the program is 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. You can also join us on Facebook. There's a Kathleen Dunn Facebook fan page. Go there, leave a comment, and we will share it on the air, or you can send us an email. The address is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. We're talking about undocumented workers on Wisconsin's dairy farm. We've gone from about 5% of workers on dairy farms being immigrants to as much as 40%, more than 5,000 individuals, according to a study by the UW-Madison Program on Agricultural Technology Studies. And we're talking about what's the impact of that on rural Wisconsin. What are some of the issues that are coming up? We'll have a couple of guests right now. We're talking with a reporter who kind of broke this story, Andy Hall, executive director and reporter for the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism. Later in the hour, in fact, in about 10 minutes from now, we will be joined by Pedro Colon, a Democrat from the 8th Assembly District, who was one of the authors of some legislation that attempted to address some of the issues regarding these immigrant workers in Wisconsin. What do you think? 800-642-1234, talk@wpr.org, or find us on Facebook. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of WPR. 21 minutes after 10 o'clock, you're listening to the Ideas Network of WPR. Coming up later on this afternoon, Glenn Moberg is in for Ben Marins. And after 5 o'clock, well, last weekend was the Pulaski Polka Days Music Festival. And Glenn and his guests will talk about the impact of polka music on Wisconsin culture. That's coming up after 5 today on Wisconsin Public Radio's Ideas Network. This hour, we're talking about dairy farming in Wisconsin and specifically the impact of 5,000 or more undocumented workers, immigrant workers, on Wisconsin's dairy farms. What's that mean for rural Wisconsin? What's it mean for the state as a whole? How's it affecting the dairy industry? I mean, there are some practical questions, too, that we're going to talk about, and perhaps I'll hold some of those discussions until we have Representative Colon on the line at about 10:30. But For now, we're talking with Andy Hall, who is executive director and a reporter for Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism. Their website is wisconsinwatch.org, wisconsinwatch.org. They've been watching this issue in particular. Well, there are a number of practical outgrowths of this influx of immigrant workers. Where are these people living?
Well, they're living, in some cases, in housing provided by the dairy farmers themselves. In some cases, those are houses located within a walking distance of the dairy barns. But what's much more common is for these families, and I say families because most of the dairy workers are living here with their children. The families are living in some other location where they have to drive into the dairy barn. So it might be a farmhouse down the road that's owned by that farmer, or it might be an apartment in town, 5, 6, 7, 15 miles away. So, this gets us into the issue of there's no mass transit in rural Wisconsin, so you've got a situation where the immigrant workers, if they're here illegally, don't have legal access to a driver's license.
But that doesn't prevent them from driving.
Correct. And what they tell us is they have a need of making this money to take care of their families, so they undertake the risk every day of going out on the roads without a driver's license and without the type of training that goes into to receiving a driver's license.
Have we seen, has there been an increase in accidents or anything like that that we can attribute to this?
So far in our reporting, John, we hadn't run into any clear evidence that the increase in this workforce was leading to a measurable increase in traffic accidents around the state. But that's certainly something that we and others would want to be watching. And I would emphasize in our reporting, which has primarily been conducted by our reporter, Jacob Kushner, we haven't tried to do this alone. We've had enormous help and levels of collaboration from our partners at Wisconsin Public Radio, Wisconsin Public TV, the Capital News Connection, which is a nonprofit news organization in Washington, D.C., that took a great look at this issue from the perspective of the U.S. Capitol, and wispolitics.com and The Country Today right here in Wisconsin, which is a newspaper focusing on agricultural issues, which really deserves credit for coming up with the story idea in the first place.
Well, as I expected, we have full phone lines, so let's take some calls. We'll start with Virginia in Janesville. Virginia, thanks so much for being part of the program today.
Thank you for taking my call, and I want to suggest some sources for your guest. I would like him to read the annual report of the United Migrant Opportunity Center in Milwaukee quickly before they take it down. It's online. And he will find out that our taxpayers' dollars through the Department of Workforce Development spends almost $1 million every year in importing, quote, farm workers, unquote, giving them housing, subsidized daycare, English lessons, all to become workers for farmers in Wisconsin. And the reason I'm interested in this is because I object to the rise of factory farming in Wisconsin and the loss of family farms. And the only way that this can happen in the community is if I don't mean this as a bad word, but they have to do it with slave labor. And our taxpayers' dollars are going to take away jobs from citizens through the Department of Workforce Development. And that is a subject that I think every Wisconsin citizen ought to be interested in, especially when we can't find jobs.
Mr. Hall?
Yeah, the caller, thank you for the call, Virginia, is raising something we hear a lot, particularly now that we're in this deep recession, surely there ought to be more opportunities for native-born workers to take these jobs on dairy farms. And all I can say is a lot of dairy farmers around the state tell us that when they have made attempts to bring aboard native-born workers, the workers were either too unreliable so that the shifts weren't being filled as they must be on a dairy farm, or that the dairy farmer couldn't afford to pay people enough to remain competitive. So it's a multifaceted problem, and there's not an easy way out of it.
Isn't at least part of the problem that the bulk of the unemployed are not located near where these farms are?
Sure, and also how many unemployed people have experience in dairy farming, whereas many of the Mexican workers who are showing up at the dairy farms here have, in fact, worked on dairy farms in Mexico, so they understand something already about that line of work and how to tend to livestock. So, you've got transportation issues. You've got the issue of how many people want to do the work and then how many people know how to do the work.
Virginia is concerned about the disappearance of the small family farm, but that train's pretty much left the station, hasn't it? I mean, you mentioned earlier that the increase in the size of farms in Wisconsin was in response to what's happening in other states, something we certainly can't control from here.
Yeah, that's certainly what dairy farmers tell us, is that they need to consolidate their herds, join forces with their neighbors, and shift more to factory-scale farming in order to remain competitive with what's happening, particularly in California, but in many other states as well, and that the choices are either to expand to that factory level or to just shut down.
Let's take a call. Thanks, Virginia, for that call. Let's take a call next from Jerry in Wausau. Jerry, good morning.
This is Jerry in Wausau.
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, I have a comment about these migrant workers. We have two big farms up here in Marathon County, and we have a lot of tree farms. You do not see any ads or help ads since you see the Mexican workers come in, a better word, non-citizens. And our children up here used to work on these tree farms and these dairy farms, and they can't get jobs because you do not see these jobs anywhere. And you go there, and you will walk through, and you will see all these Mexicans working, and they will not take an application from our children. And then you see in the Wausau Daily Herald that they're getting $600,000+ subsidy to run their farm, and we can't even get our children a job that we used to do. I did it as a child. I did the shearing of the trees and milking of the cows, but you cannot get your kid into that anymore. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Jerry, thanks for the call. Well, there's an interesting perspective. Farmers are not willing to hire the locals.
Sure, and I don't know which farmers specifically you might be referring to in Marathon County, but in some cases the farmers say that they have advertised in their communities, and the people who showed up just weren't reliable. That is, the native-born workers who showed up weren't reliable. I can understand why if a farmer has made that decision to hire immigrant workers, the caller might not be seeing ads in the local media for those job openings, because that would be a different stream of communication. But it does beg the question, at some point, particularly with this recession, would people now perhaps be interested, native-born workers perhaps be interested in taking some of these jobs at the local farms.
Jerry, thanks for the call. Let's go next to John in Madison. Hi, John.
Hey, good morning. I live in Madison, but we have a family farm out in Richland Center. And our experience with our neighbors, we're not a dairy farm, but our experience with our farmers who do neighbor is, I was at an event a couple months ago where, you know, one of the local farmers started to say, oh, and about those, you know, Mexican immigrants, and every hair on the back of my neck started to stand up. And then the next line out of his mouth, what a great addition to the community. They've helped bolster the church. You know, we're seeing this. And as I finally decided to enter the conversation after that point, the dairy farmers there are saying exactly what your author has said a couple times. If the local people were willing to work hard and reliable, they would hire them. But so often you get a 16 or 17-year-old kid who goes out and tries to work that first week or two, realizes how hard that work is, won't do it for $10 or $11 an hour, and they quit. Whereas their experience with the migrant workers is, they might come, and they might only be there 8 or 9 months, but when they leave, they also find their own replacements. So, and to Virginia, in Janesville, if your, you know, friends will move to Richland Center and will work for $11 an hour during really hard work, it's there. You just can't do it from Janesville. And I'll go ahead and hang up and take my call off the phone, off the line.
Thanks, John.
Yeah,
Andy Hall?
Yes, thank you very much, and thank you, John, for the call. The farmers we've talked to have said that they did a lot of soul searching before making that decision to shift to immigrant workers. John Rosenow, for example, over in the western part of the state, you know, says that he tried repeatedly and ended up with the kind of undependable workers that the caller was describing. Teenagers would show up some, but farmers have said, particularly on those nighttime shifts on the weekends, Friday night, Saturday night, the workers just weren't coming. The farmer was then having to go do the work himself, or in some cases found it difficult to get the work done with the shortage of hired help showing up. So they have in many cases reluctantly made that decision to seek help from immigrant workers. And some of the farmers have taken some extra steps then, even going so far as to go down to Mexico and meet with some of the families in their home country and to learn some Spanish and really try to build some connections to them through a program operated out of Wisconsin.
All right, we're being joined now by Representative Pedro Colon, who is a Democrat from Wisconsin's 8th Assembly District. Representative Colon, thank you so much for being with us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
I don't know if you had a chance to hear the first half hour or so of the program, as Andy Hall and I and our listeners have been talking about the issue of the number of undocumented workers on Wisconsin's dairy farms. From your perspective, what's the biggest challenge to the state of Wisconsin from this situation? What's the biggest thing that you're looking at trying to get solved?
Well, you know, as you know, I represent a district that's really in the city. I don't have a lot of sort of connections to the farmers other than the state representatives, which represent them in the state legislature. And over the years, these issues have been ongoing for many years since I joined the legislature and before. And what has changed is that increasingly in rural areas, this workforce has become more dependent upon. And the legislators in those areas, independent of party, Republican or Democrat, have joined me in efforts to, for example, pass a driver's license for immigrants and so forth. So it is a change. It is a political change that has occurred. Maybe quietly and steadily, but it's definitely here.
Now, Representative Colon, you did introduce legislation in the most recent legislative session that would have addressed, and we haven't really talked, we've talked some about the driver's license situation, but I wanted to have you address that issue as well. Your legislation passed in the Assembly, but it was stripped out of a bill in the State Senate, if I understand correctly, and did not become law. Talk about the legislation you tried to get passed and try and give us a picture of why the Senate did not act on it.
Well, essentially, there was an act passed and signed into law about 3 years ago that required anybody who had a license in Wisconsin or was going to apply for a license to determine their status or their relationship, which is something we had never done in the history of the state. It's probably one of the most significant requirements for anybody seeking a license in the nation, although some states have copied it from that legislation. Ultimately, it wasn't felt immediately, but as time went on and licenses started to expire around the state, immigrants who were not in status could not obtain, that is, immigration status, could not obtain their driver's license. So essentially, the law said that based on the Real ID Act, which was a congressional mandate required by Congressman Sensenbrenner, there was an exception which said that for the limited purposes of driving, we could issue a driving certificate. It would be less than a license in that it wouldn't allow you to do certain things, but it would certainly allow you to, number one, identify yourself, and number two, allow you to drive legally. Essentially, you know, that bill ultimately did not pass in the Senate. So here we are. We still have a lot of people driving without a driver's license, probably the most significant practical issue in immigration reform, although immigration reform is a lot more important, and there are a whole host of issues around immigration reform. This was just a little sort of caveat, as I call it, or exemption that we were trying to draft to alleviate sort of this situation.
Mm-hmm. Well, what was the sticking point in not giving these driving certificates? What's the objection to doing that?
Well, I really think it's the immigration debate. I mean, there's, you know, you're talking about a sensible solution, and when I say sensible solution, most police departments around the state, the Wisconsin troopers, everybody was in favor of it, because obviously you'd identify a driver, the driver, you would know, they'd know the rules. So it's a logical, sensible legislation, but it is within the debate about immigration, and the debate about immigration is very polarized, as we've known and found out again from the Arizona law, which everybody's been discussing, and it has a lot of political aspects. I mean, there are parts of basically, my view is that the objection is basically a political one based on the fact that there is a segment of the population who doesn't want to have any kind of people, immigrants, out of status, joined any kind of legal status. That is, they don't want to allow people to come in, people that have been largely here for a long time and have been contributing.
We have two guests with us this hour, and the most recent of which is Representative Pedro Colon from Wisconsin's 8th Assembly District, which is in northeastern Wisconsin. And also, we have been talking earlier this hour, and we'll continue to talk with Andy Hall, Executive Director and Reporter for the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism. And if you want to read their reports, you can do so at wisconsinwatch.org. We'll be taking some phone calls and some questions for Representative Colon and for Andy Hall as well in just a moment. I'm John Munson, in for Kathleen Dunn for the next couple of weeks. You're listening to the Ideas Network of WPR. This is the Ideas Network of WPR. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn today. Coming up next hour with Larry Mueller. After 11:45, Larry's guests talk about Wisconsin's weather and climate. That's always an interesting topic. And, of course, around where I live, if you don't like the weather, wait 5 minutes. This hour we're talking about the fact that Wisconsin's dairy farms have a lot of undocumented workers working at them. There are a lot of issues surrounding this, and not the least of which is the fact that these workers need to get to work, and they're often driving on Wisconsin's roads without driver's licenses. That's just one issue. There are a lot of others, and we're trying to talk about as many of them as we can in this hour with a pair of guests, Andy Hall, who's Executive Director and Reporter for Wisconsin Center for investigative journalism, and also with State Representative Pedro Colon from Wisconsin's 8th Assembly District. Representative Colon, we talked a little bit about the driver's license issue, but you touched on a point. I mean, the immigration debate itself is very polarizing. What about the fact, I mean, some people are saying, hey, look, these are illegal immigrants and they need to be collected basically and sent home. They're not here legally. And they should go home and try and get into the country legally instead and go to work then. But they're breaking the law, and that's the only thing that really matters here.
Well, you know, I think that there's sort of that feeling, and then there's reality. The reality is that we went through an economic surge in the 90s. Many of these folks came in. They are essentially embedded into our society. For example, I continue to talk about kids who are out of status in my district who can barely speak Spanish anymore because they've been here 12 years, 15 years, and they still are out of status. We have about 12 to 14 million people who are out of status that have been coming in throughout the 90s. You know, my view is that at the end of the day, we're going to have to pass immigration reform. If you track immigration, you really don't see any of these 14 million people going back to Mexico as we fortify the border down in those border states. I think ultimately you have to have a reform. You have to have a graduated system for these folks to come part of our society. That has been done in our history. It can happen again. Ronald Reagan did it in 1986. With an immigration reform bill that at that time, you know, didn't satisfy and had a lot of opponents, just like it did today, just like immigration reform does today. But ultimately, you have to deal with the issue. You can't pretend that the economic reality doesn't exist. I think your caller, and I caught the latter end of the last caller, who said that basically these are really difficult jobs that people don't really want. Whether it's teenagers or not in farms, it may be teenagers in the city. It may be competing economic opportunities. I always point to the fact that you can make it for about $10 an hour at the Gap store in a mall under air conditioning, listening to rock and roll music. Or you can go work in a farm $10 for a very long time. I think those kids that choose to go to the Gap are probably being rational. It's a lot easier work, and it pays about the same thing. But there's a whole host of jobs that are being done by the immigrant community that otherwise wouldn't get done. And I think that economic reality requires us to provide some solutions for this population.
Let's take a call from Richard in Fond du Lac. Richard, good morning.
Yeah, good morning. I'm working at a dairy farm also, and a lot of debate has been done about, you know, the out-of-status debate of the immigrants, but also, you know, we kind of always put aside the human rights aspect of, you know, the immigrants, at least undocumented immigrants working the dairy farm, because they get also abused because they are undocumented.
Richard,
Hang
on, Richard. I'm going to have to wear. We just can't hear you because you've got a. There's a bad phone line there. Maybe you're in a bad cell phone area. Would you please call back? I would like to capture your comments here, but there's so much static on the line. We can't hear you. Let's take a call next from Rick in Danbury. Rick, good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead, please.
My issue is that. I've had quite a bit of experience with working with the Spanish and stuff out west and construction and stuff. And my issue is people just don't get the bottom line. They aren't even supposed to be here. They're illegal citizens. You know, I don't know why people can't understand that. We're coming up with all these excuses, and the bottom line is they aren't supposed to be here. And I don't see how we can put half of Mexico to work. I mean, I don't understand that.
Rick, thanks. Thanks for the call, Representative Colon.
Well, you know, I don't think anybody doubts that they're immigrants. They're not migrants. He is right. They're immigrants. That means they come from another place, and they have been in our society They have been here for 20 years, some of them. The issue is whether you would believe that after 20 years, 15 years, 10 years, these families would essentially be either packed up forcefully or pack up themselves, you know, volitionally and move back to Mexico or Guatemala or wherever they came from. And that would solve the problem. I just don't think that, you know, that is a very clear solution, but it's just not a solution that we can apply to reality. It doesn't apply to reality. And that's why, I mean, he makes a good point. You know, there is a clear legal difference. Some are legal, some are illegal. But the reality is that you can't just sort of capture everyone and just send them back. And the reality is, The government of Mexico has been tracking since we have been so some of these more tough bills on immigration have come down, and these laws and the wall and sort of all these feelings. The government of Mexico has been tracking how many of these folks are coming back. They're simply not coming back to Mexico. They don't see a lot of reverse migration. And so if you don't see a lot of reverse migration and you know they're here and you know they will be here, I think that there, it's a twofold approach. One is make sure that you seal the border in a way in which we can control this for in the future, but you also have to be cognizant of the fact that you have to move these people from a place where they're totally illegal and have been working large sectors of the economy for a very long time into a place where they can be citizens. And that could be a graduated method in one under which you can apply language learning methods or tests. Be good citizens. There's all sorts of graduated ways in which you can take somebody from essentially being illegal to having some kind of legal, conditional legal residency, some kind of legal residency, and ultimately citizenship. We have done this in our history for many, you know, since the inception of our country. We can do it again, and they're reasonable sort of answers to the problem, but ultimately you can't have sort of the sentiment that, hey, why don't we round people up and throw them back in their country? It's a perfectly sort of black and white sentiment, but it's not one that you can achieve.
Andy Hall, I want to capture your thoughts on this as well. What have you been thinking about the discussion here in the last few minutes?
Yeah, this you know, once again illustrates how many people want this to be an issue of blacks and whites. That is, you know, black and white, clear-cut choices, but so often in immigration we find ourselves slipping into to the grays when we talk about the realities. Even the recent comments from U.S. Representative James Sensenbrenner, a Republican from Wisconsin, I think illustrate that. On the one hand, he takes a very harsh line and says that the American public is opposed to granting amnesty to illegal immigrants, and we need to vigorously enforce employer sanctions and fine people who break the law by hiring illegal immigrants. But on the other hand, circling back here to the issue of the dairy workers, the immigrant dairy workers, Representative Sensenbrenner told us that he may be willing to support some sort of temporary guest worker program for those situations because he hasn't forgotten the concerns of dairy farmers. So on the one hand, things start to look real crystal clear, and then as soon as you get into the specifics of, well, what are we going to do about it and what would be best for Wisconsin, you can quickly find that it gets pretty complicated.
Well, is are dairy farms being sanctioned for hiring the what are essentially illegal workers?
Yeah, we've done a lot of checking on that issue, John, and so far haven't learned of any situations in which Wisconsin dairy farmers have been punished for hiring illegal immigrants.
Now, Representative Colon, is that a concern of yours, and is there some legislative remedy that the state could do? I mean, this seems to be a federal question.
Yeah, I mean, by and large, this is all a federal question. You know, the states have very little to do with it, and we're going to see that play out in Arizona, where the Department of Justice and the Obama administration have essentially sued Arizona, stating what I think is the obvious, that the Constitution says that you know, the federal government regulates all matters relating to immigration. Obviously, our attorney general in Wisconsin disagrees, and he's filed a counter lawsuit. you know, I think that I believe that all of these issues can be have reasonable solutions, and ultimately the federal government's going to have to act. I can't, and I tell my community, a lot of them which are immigrant, a lot of them which are sympathetic to immigrants, and I tell them, look, there's very few things I can do. Ultimately, our federal delegation and our president have to carry the weight on this, and they, by and large, have not been able to do that. We have supporters of both sides. We have people that want to be more reasonable, sort of, you know, Senator Cole and U.S. Congresswoman Moore and so forth, but we have people like Sensenbrenner who take this hardline approach but have all these caveats. So ultimately, they're going to have to act. There's very little the state legislature can do in this regard.
Okay. Let's take a quick call from Angie in Milwaukee. Angie, good morning.
Hi, good morning. My name is Angie, and I'm just calling, and I'm relating on your topic that you're talking about. And I have a lot of friends that are unemployed, and they would never take a job like that because, you know, they didn't want the pay is so low. And I have my family runs a business, and we have some migrants working with us, and I am so thankful for them because they help us because nobody's going to take them kind of job. You know, if you would get rid of all the people that come here to work, especially the Latin people, we would have a lot of businesses closed down because they do all the hard work. They're good hard workers, and, you know, I just want to say that, you know, the people that are complaining about they don't have no jobs because they probably don't want it because they don't want to get paid low wages, you know, but it's all the they're very hard workers, and I just want to say thanks to them. I'm glad they're here, and I think that, you know, I'm glad that they help us, and I just want to say that, and I'm glad that if they want a job, there's a lot of jobs out there. I have a lot of friends that don't want to even work. They'd rather be unemployed because they don't want to get paid $10 an hour. They say, I have an education. I'm going to school. Why should I get paid $10? And they're getting unemployed. They'd rather be unemployed. I'm like, well, why don't you come over? We'll help you. We'll pay. You can work for us. They're like, no way. And I just wanted to say that. I'm just so glad that they're here and they're helping us. Because if they close, if they took them all back, we would have no workers. We would have no dishwashers. Nobody's serving us. I'm so glad that they're here.
Thanks, Angie. We got it. We're starting to run out of time here. Angie says, hey, the educated workers we have in this country don't want to do a lot of the jobs that only pay $10 an hour, and somebody has to do them. So these people want to work. Let's let them work. Representative Colon?
Well, you know, I don't know what the specifics are of people's individual circumstances. I think that, you know, economically we rely on immigrant labor. We've come to rely, especially in the agricultural sector, independent of industry, whether it's dairy, whether it's, you know, produce, whether it's canning, we have come to rely on this labor. And so we have to sort of accommodate these people. And in my view, you have to accommodate so that they can succeed as Americans. They're not going back. You know, I think we're going through tough economic times, and you know, I think that a lot of people are hurting. In fact, you see companies like Harley-Davidson, they're not employing anybody else. But I think that sector of the economy is not affected by immigrant labor. Immigrant labor comes here to work. Largely, the employment loss is because, you know, big corporations continue to move to India or to China. That's why we're hurting. I think they're different issues, and they're different, in some ways, disconnected parts of the economy. I think the last caller is right in that if you're educated and if you have a long work history, it's very difficult to go back and work at $10 an hour, you know, milking cows. It's just a difficult thing to go back to. And so the employers, meanwhile, the farmers need reliable labor. So I think they're, you know, I don't think that you can solve the joblessness by sort of rounding up immigrants and taking them out of the country. I think that's another one of those myths that where reality doesn't really meet the facts, mm-hmm. or you know, it's just not jiving.
Oops, I think we lost Representative Colon there for a moment. Andy Hall, I wanted to go to you anyway and give you about 30 seconds to kind of wrap things up here, our discussion. Where are we going with this issue?
Well, I think what we can expect to see, John, for the foreseeable future
Well, now I'm not hearing anything, so...
Hello?
Andy Hall, are you there?
Yes, I sure am, John.
Okay.
Thank you.
Go ahead. Take about a half a minute and kind of summarize for us where we're going on this issue.
Well, I think in the coming 5 years, 10 years, we can expect to see actually a continuation, maybe an acceleration of the reliance upon immigrant dairy workers in Wisconsin. If we look back over the past 5 years, dairy producers and processors invested about $1 billion in modernization projects. The forecasts call for similar expenditures in the coming five-year period, and with that type of a shift, the workforces are going to continue to expand in size, which can mean only one thing, but an increasing demand for low-cost, dependable workers. And if we can take any hints from what's happened in Wisconsin over the past decade, it's going to move this way for the foreseeable future.
Andy Hall, thanks so much for joining us. Also, Representative Pedro Colon as well. Thank you both for an informative hour.
Thank you.
Pedro Colon is a Democratic representative from Wisconsin's 8th Assembly District. Andy Hall is executive director and reporter for the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism, and their website is wisconsinwatch.org. Chrissy Pease produced this program. Dave Potraz and Rachel Owens handled on-air production. Thanks to both of them for a good morning. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. It's the Ideas Network of WPR.